Okay, we'll reconvene the court. The next en banc argument is the State of Nevada versus Rigdell Farmer Jr., case number 80774. Justice Silver is in Las Vegas. As counsel knows, Justice Herndon recused in the case. Justice Pickering is participating remotely, as is Justice Stiglitz. Justice Stiglitz has a video issue, but she is participating audio. Can you hear us all right, Justice Stiglitz?
I can, Chief. Thank you.
Okay, great. And then Justice Kadish and Justice Perigary are with me here in Carson City. Are you ready to go, Mr. Villani?
I am, Mr. Chief Justice. Thank you.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Justices, and may it please the court. My name is Jake Villani, and I will be representing the appellant, State of Nevada, in this matter. This case is over the haphazard dismissal over a 20-minute delay, which dismantled months of investigation in preparation for trial and wasted nearly incalculable judicial resources, as well as the time of the jurors who were called to serve on this case. The district court in this case abandoned its duty for the presentation of evidence and instead dismissed the case as a punitive measure against the state. Such a cavalier exercise of the extreme sanction of dismissal was capricious and entirely disproportionate to the situation. On August 9, 2019, Dennis Avanster Gregarium, the victim in this case, was shot in a parking lot near a Mediterranean restaurant, and officers responded to the scene. At that point, they began what became a very thorough investigation for such a crime. Dennis noted that his assailant went by the moniker of D. Forensics was called to the scene, pulled video of the incident.
Excuse me, Mr. Villani, this is Justice Stiglitz. I'd really like to, if you don't mind, just want to get, you know, kind of to the meat of it here, which is, I just don't understand why on Monday, when the court announced the schedule, twice said it was 9:30, you didn't raise any issues at that time with Judge Gonzalez. You didn't let her know that Overflow had ordered you all present on Tuesday at 10 a.m. Then the morning of trial, again, there are a number of opportunities to kind of alert the court that there may be a witness problem. And the court gave you your 20 minutes. You asked for another 20. She offered you five. You declined. You didn't make a continuance motion. You didn't ask to use the transcript. I mean, really, this is the issue that we're here to talk about. So I really just want to get your thoughts on that.
Sure. There's a lot to unpack there, Justice Stiglitz. So I'll start at the beginning. The state was not anticipating our first witness being late. And I know we asked for the jabs of the incident to be transmitted, and there was a reason for that. It was kind of the disrespectful nature in which everybody was addressed with regard to this. But on top of that, we knew going into Tuesday morning that we had a 9:30 start. We also knew that we had to get through openings. Now, we had informed Dennis the day before when we were able to meet with him that his start time would be 10 o'clock. He needed to be there at 10 o'clock. Now, it can be argued whether we should have anticipated our witness being late. We didn't. And then it can be argued that, well, we didn't have a backup plan in place, but we did. We had the two out-of-state witnesses ready and waiting, as far as we were concerned, to testify next, and we actually tried to call them. And if you look on the jabs, the moment we tried to call those two witnesses is when Judge Gonzalez's judicial executive assistant came out of the back and informed all parties, including us, because remember, we had been sitting at counsel table this entire time, unaware of this, that one of those witnesses had said he's taking his wife to work and he'll be back in 45 minutes. Then that judicial executive assistant. Yes.
Let me jump in there. You have two witnesses that were in a car that disregarded a subpoena to be ready to testify when you told them. You have a heroin addict that's homeless. When the judge tells you on Monday that trial starts at 9:30, you have a multitude of other witnesses, such as detectives and police officers that you could have called on Monday afternoon to come in and to fill up that space in order to, in case your witness was late, which you expected he was going to be late. You didn't call any of those witnesses to be there after the court told you it was starting at 9:30. Correct? You didn't call any other, all of these other witnesses, police officers, medics, other people who figured out who this defendant was. None of the other, you just chose to start your trial with that particular witness, but you didn't have to. You certainly can start a trial with detectives and cops, right?
And that's absolutely correct, Justice. However, everything in this case, the way we had set it up, it flowed from what occurred with Dennis, and then it would go on from there with a timeline. Now, I agree with you, Justice, that we didn't have to call him first. I disagree that we somehow anticipated him being late. We were counting on him being there. But let me be clear. The 20 minutes we asked for was not for Dennis to arrive. The 20 minutes we asked for was because the couple in the car who, as you stated, disregarded the subpoena. Now, I'll give you a little bit of background on that. We spoke with them earlier in the morning, right before we went into openings. And at that point, we were anticipating them testifying at 10:45. So we told them, stand by. It will likely be around 10:45 you'll testify. I did not know, nor were we informed, that he was going to take off and cut it so close by driving his wife to work at that time. We also had another witness who was en route 20 minutes away, a sergeant with Metro, who was another who, once this all started going down, we started making frantic phone calls for witnesses to be present. So the 20 minutes we were asking for, within that 20 minutes, the way it turns out, we would have four witnesses ready to testify. We had no idea how long the defense was going with their openings. Turned out they were very quick. So boom, we're right at 10 o'clock, and that's where the surprise from the state came from, because we had not been notified that Dennis was there yet, and that's where we had to put these contingencies in place.
Mr. Villani, when the state has a surprise, whether it's at justice court or municipal court, it's not uncommon. In fact, it's quite common, especially in Las Vegas, that witnesses don't show up. When you are surprised, isn't the procedure to go under oath and make a Bustos motion saying, I'm surprised at the non-appearance of the witness, and I'm asking you, court, in good faith and not for purposes of delay, for a continuance? And you didn't go under oath and request a continuance under Bustos. Even for 10 minutes, 1 hour, 2 hours, you made no motion at all. You just asked the court to recess again.
And, Your Honor, my understanding of a continuance under Bustos is that I have to have some basis to believe that witness isn't coming. At the time, that was not my belief. My belief at the time was if we could get another witness on and get the trial started, that in that time period, Dennis would show up. I was not asking for a continuance because I wasn't asking for the trial to be continued to another date. I was asking for a brief recess. And, you know, this wasn't any of our first rodeos. I've been in trials where juries have been sat out in the hallway while the court flushes issues out for hours. And so it wasn't beyond the realm of possibility or beyond the realm of reasonableness in the state's opinion that the court was asked, can we please just get 20 minutes? Now, I understand if Judge Gonzalez wants to turn to the jury and say, it's the state's fault, you have to go in the back and wait for 20 minutes. Well, I don't agree with that tactic. It happens a lot where a party will ask for time. Some judges take that route. However, to dismiss the case because the state's asking for a brief 20-minute recess, which, to fix a comedy of errors that was right there in front of the court, she knew everything going on. We had no idea that executive assistant was going to come out of the back and tell us that, oh, by the way, your witnesses that you were planning on to back up are now no longer available. So at that point, when those things are happening and when it's clear what's going on, I don't think it's unreasonable to ask the court, hey, can you give us 20 minutes, especially when there was no way that 20 minutes was going to cause us to go beyond the one-week timeline that we had given the jury when they were qualified.
Mr. Villani? This is Justice Tatish. Yes. Hi, in Carson City.
Hi, Justice.
Hi. So I just want to clarify, the two audiovisual witnesses that it turned out were in the car and you needed 20 more minutes to get them on their computer. What time had you told them to be ready and available? 10 or 11 or some other time?
So So my recollection is we spoke with them actually right before openings in the anteroom back there, and we told them, I believe it was 10:45, but it wasn't like a, we need you right at 10:45. It was, you will likely testify at 10:45. Now, had he notified me that he planned on taking his wife to work, I would have told him, please don't do that because we need you on standby, but I was unaware that that was even an issue.
Thank you.
Of course. And Justice Stiglitz, I know you kind of ran down a litany of issues. Did I address everything you had, or was there something else?
I'm sure we'll get to all of them, so I'll let you go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. And Justice,
good morning. This is, yes, Justice Pickering, and I have one question, which is at page 12 of your opening brief. You say that the dismissal was without prejudice. That caught my eye because, effectively, if we don't give you relief on this appeal, wouldn't the dismissal be with prejudice due to jeopardy having attached with the jury being sworn?
And, Your Honor, I really didn't flush out that issue of double jeopardy because I didn't anticipate an adverse ruling here. I did reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, but I'll answer your question really quick. I think the dismissal without prejudice is more evidence of Judge Gonzalez's bias towards this matter and just the fact that she didn't want to deal with the case. If she was dismissing it as a punitive matter, which it certainly was the way it was set up, she would have just dismissed, look, this is dismissed, period. But to dismiss the case without prejudice and somehow force the state to then go back, refile the charges, go through the preliminary hearing process, and waste all of those judicial resources is odd to the state, and I would have to further research how the double jeopardy claim would attach to that, Justice.
Did she specifically say that the dismissal was without prejudice and you all could go back and start over? Or is that your assumption from what she said? I didn't see it in her order, but...
That's my assumption from what she said. So I don't know that she specifically said that, but my understanding and the way that we have briefed this is that it was without prejudice, and so we're reading into that order that it was without prejudice.
I have trouble seeing that. If you have a record site that you base that on, I'd like to see it or hear it.
Certainly. Certainly, and I will address that in my rebuttal case. I'll look for
thank
that
you.
While Mr. Lisk gives. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Lisk?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Stephen Lisk, and I am representing Rigdell Farmer in this matter. Justices, the state wants to present this case as the district court dismissing this case because of witness tardiness. That's not what this case is actually about, and I would submit that that is a gross simplification of what's actually going on, and I believe that the justice's question reflect that. This is a case where the defense's position is the fact that the state was unprepared completely. I understand today Mr. Villani is wanting to argue that it was unexpected that their alleged victim was going to be late. However, at the time that he was making the argument in district court, it was known. In fact, we would submit that it was expected that he would run late. The state argued to the district court, he tends to run late. That's why the confusion as to what time he was actually supposed to show up. The state had every reason to expect that Dennis was going to be late. This was an issue that they had addressed at the preliminary hearing when they objected to a defense continuance at the preliminary hearing. And the reason I put that in our brief is because it shows the fact that this was known to the state all the way back to the preliminary hearing, that they had an issue with their witness, their alleged victim. This was something that they absolutely should have anticipated and, yes, expected to have happened. So the questions regarding why didn't you have a backup, and I can actually answer what time, at least according to his brief, the other witnesses were scheduled. They were scheduled, according to the brief from the state, for 11 o'clock. So from 9:30 until 11, their only plan was to have Dennis testify. And that is very telling when you consider what Judge Gonzalez was trying to do, trying to find any other witness.
Had you said you were doing an opening statement at that point, though? I mean, they had their opening and your opening, correct? Unless you were going to hold yours.
Yes, and we had made no indication that we were going to be reserving opening or anything like that. So, yes, it was understood, I believe, and reasonably expected that we would be providing an opening statement. And I understand that, yes, we always try to gauge times and everything like that, but the state knew that this witness was completely unreliable in terms of timing, in terms of showing up. They could not contact him to inform him of the different time, or at least they didn't have a cell phone. No indication that they used an investigator or detective to try to go out and get that. And knowing that this was a potentially issue, as I believe it was Justice Silver said, they didn't have a backup plan, not until 11 o'clock. And then when they were stuck with, well, what do we do now that he's not available? The only recourse that they provided to the court was, you need to give us more time. It's absolutely reasonable to request a brief continuance, which the judge, Judge Gonzalez, did grant originally. She said, I understand, go talk to VWAC, talk to them, find out where this is. And then when they came back, they needed more time. She granted a brief recess to allow for them to get a witness, to any witness, an investigator, a detective, another witness, either on audiovisual or anything like that. And despite all of that, they were not able to come through and comply with the court's orders. And they requested another recess. At this point, the district court, again, has a decision. There's absolutely no reason to think that that a decision has to be made in a particular way if it's within the discretion of the district court. The district court could have granted the state's request for an additional recess. Absolutely. It's our contention that she had that authority. But she also has the authority to deny the request, not because of witness tardiness, but because, honestly, of the state's unpreparedness. It was very clear to the court as well as to the defense that the state was not prepared. They were woefully unprepared at that time, because when their one expected party witness was not there on time, they didn't have a backup plan, and they were scrambling to the point to where they still couldn't get anybody into the courtroom to testify in a timely manner.
So
at that point,
Mr. Wisk, sorry, this is Justice Kadish in Carson City.
Yes.
If I could interrupt you there. When I think it was you, or may have been your co-counsel, but I think it was you who ultimately made the motion for dismissal, and you said, if the state doesn't have a witness to call, I would ask that they rest, and we'll be asking for the case to be dismissed. Tell me what the resting of the case means, and how is that related to the motion?
Looking back and doing more research, I would argue that the resting of the case is actually not really relevant to the issue as to whether the district court has the authority and the discretion to dismiss the case. In the moment, and yes, this is a situation that I've never witnessed. I've never seen a district attorney not be able to call a witness immediately after opening statements. So, you know, I was following along with the district court's desire or request that they rest the case, but looking back and doing research, I would submit that that's actually irrelevant, and that the inherent powers that the district court has to dismiss based on the fact that the state's dilatory behavior, that is absolutely within her discretion. And so
in your view, I apologize again, in your view,
absolutely.
Was this a dismissal based on a lack of sufficient evidence, or what was it based on?
I would submit that this was a dismissal based on the fact that the state was completely and woefully unprepared and was basically holding the court, the defense, as well as the jury hostage to do the trial as they wanted to do it and as on their timing. And at that point, the district court used their discretion and said that they weren't going to be held hostage and they weren't going to basically just give the state the only thing that they were asking for. And at that point, they dismissed the case. And I would submit further, I'm sorry.
Sorry. So what I was going to ask is it like the court's order ultimately relies on inherent powers. That's what she cited in the order. Is it like a courtroom management issue then? Is that what you're thinking?
That would be close. I don't think that it's just courtroom management. I don't think that it's just a okay, well, I want things to go at this exact time the way that I want it to go, and if you don't do it, I'm going to dismiss your case. Right. But I do think that in those inherent powers is absolutely to take it on a case-by-case basis. And
Mr. Lisk, this is Justice yes. Silver. Was your client in custody at the time that the state was unprepared to proceed to trial?
Yes, he was. In fact, if I remember correctly, and I could be mistaken, I believe he was currently being held on a no bail hold on that particular case.
So he's on a no bail and he's in custody and the state's unprepared to proceed. Did you make any argument regarding prejudice to your client based on his custody status?
At that time, Justice, I don't believe that I did make an argument specifically with regards to the prejudice as regarding his custody status. I do think that that's absolutely relevant to the situation, the fact that, and when I say that he was being held hostage and we were having to wait, that's absolutely along with us. Not only trying to go to trial in a timely fashion, but also the fact that he was in custody on a no bail hold is absolutely relevant. But no, I did not make that argument at the time.
Had he invoked his right to a speedy trial as well?
I believe so, Your Honor. I believe that this was
Counsel, if I could interrupt, this is Justice Kadish. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think what I saw in the record is that originally he invoked, but that defense counsel later sought continuance, and that was granted, and that's when you got this date.
And I appreciate that. That does jog my memory. Yes, that is correct. He invoked, and then we ended up getting a brief continuance, I believe, to the next stack.
Thank you.
But I would like to ask you, this is Justice Pickering. I apologize. It's so hard
Absolutely.
To come at you from all angles. You argue that the state should have moved for a continuance, but they couldn't have kept the same jury, and wouldn't double jeopardy have attached? So even if the state says they thought it was a dismissal without prejudice effectively, wouldn't this be a dismissal with prejudice? So we have to evaluate it against that standard.
And I thank you for that question, and I was going to address that. Yes, I would submit that this, while it wasn't necessarily briefed, I would submit that because the jury wasn't handled, that jeopardy absolutely did attach, and that there would be implications regarding double jeopardy. And obviously, that is a consideration for not only this court, but at the time, it was also a consideration, I believe, for the district court when she made the decision that she made.
She recognize that? There's a sense I have reading the briefs, and I read quite a bit of the record as well, that she thought that this was without prejudice somehow, but I don't see how that could be the case. So we need to evaluate it as a district court effectively throwing out criminal charges altogether because of this delay and not being prepared with the witness that was slated to be called.
And I would concur with that assessment. And obviously, I understand that that is going to be a pretty weighing factor. And I understand that, you know, I don't, and this is where, you know, another argument for the district court. The district court did not wake up on February 25th with the intent to dismiss an attempted murder charge. The intent of the district court was to go to trial. And the district court was ready to go to trial and wanted to do so in as reasonably efficient manner as possible. There was a part with jury selection in voir dire where she was hurrying me along. Like a lot of attorneys, I can get a little long-winded. Kind of nice to have a clock to tell me when I need to be quiet. But when I started to go a little long in jury selection, the district court said, hey, wrap it up. And the reason was because she recognized, as all parties should, that the people that are most impacted by a trial, I would submit, are the defendant as well as the jury. The court, the attorneys, we get paid. It's our jobs. That's what we're there to do. It's affecting juries to have to come. So the reason you see a lot of district court judges, and I would submit that attorneys also need to be aware of the impact that we are having on these people's lives, we need to be prepared. We need to absolutely understand, hey, look, we need to have backup plans as best as we possibly can so that, hey, look, when things don't go according to plan A, not only do we have a plan B, but we got a Z all the way down to Z if we have to, so that the jury's time is not being wasted.
Mr. List, this is Justice Hardesty, if I may interrupt your comment.
Absolutely.
I want to be clear here. Mr. Villani is of the view that the judge's dismissal was intended to be without prejudice. You seem to think that it was with prejudice, but I want to know in this argument what your position is. Because quite frankly, what is concerning, and I think Justice Pickering has hit on an important point, is that the difference could involve a serious double jeopardy question, which changes the dynamics quite a bit in terms of how one evaluates the reasonableness of the judge's actions, as well as other requirements that are set out in a number of cases dealing with dismissal and inherent powers. So what is your position? Is it your position that she intended to dismiss the case with prejudice?
Based on my review, I believe that Judge Gonzalez may have intended to dismiss it without prejudice. But I think that based on my understanding of a jury being impaneled, jeopardy attaching, and the reasons for this case being dismissed, that jeopardy absolutely would attach. So I would say that if her intention was in fact to dismiss this case without prejudice, I would submit that that is actually, the defense would say that that is actually inaccurate, and that this should have been dismissed with prejudice because of jeopardy attaching.
I kind of get the feeling from your response that your view is it doesn't matter what the judge intended, because the jury was impaneled, double jeopardy would have attached regardless.
That would be if this was to be remanded. That would be an argument that we would be making, is the fact that jeopardy was absolutely attached and that it should be dismissed if another indictment came forward. This was obviously not an issue that we addressed thoroughly, but it was an issue that we did discuss, and it was something that we did consider. And the reasons for that
Excuse me for just 1 minute, though. And
yes.
I'm going to ask Chief Justice Hardesty if he'll give you a couple more or another minute or so to answer. But to me, reviewing this on an abuse of discretion standard, it makes a difference. If the judge who imposed the sanction didn't consider or was under a misapprehension with respect to the result of her order of dismissal, i.e. that this was the whole case and not simply a do-over, then did she not fail to consider lesser alternative sanctions? And I'm coming at it from a civil law perspective, but it would be the same metric in this context. You could impose a fine on the lawyer, you could sanction the lawyer, you could give the jury an instruction that the state was at fault here. You could do all kinds of things that stop short of a dismissal with prejudice. And so to me, the calculation of prejudice in this makes a difference in our review. Could you address that?
I can, Your Honor, and if assuming I do have a few minutes over my time, I see that I am out of time.
Yes, please do so, and I'll extend the state 2 minutes more on their rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chief Justice Hardesty.
So I understand that, and I believe that Justice Pickering, you said that this was not in the order, and that it was based on conversations and the record, that it was her intent to do this. It is my intention and my belief that Judge Gonzalez would have taken all these things in consideration. And it is the defense's position that the state did not give any alternative because of the manner in which they were requesting a recess. They weren't requesting anything else. They weren't requesting a continuance. They weren't requesting to use the preliminary hearing transcripts. They weren't requesting anything other than just a recess.
Requested a continuance, they told the jury it would only be a one-week assignment. They wouldn't have the same jury come back if it were continued. And you're faulting them for not asking for that. That's,
I'm faulting the state for not availing themselves to any potential alternative. And an alternative for asking for a continuance, that may not have been the best option for the state. But they in their briefing said, well, they could have asked for a preliminary hearing transcript to be submitted. They didn't even ask for that. They did not ask for any other alternative other than the court granting their request for a 20-minute recess. My position would be forcing this. Basically, the state's position is that the court didn't have any discretion, that the court had to grant them this 20-minute recess, and that was it. That was the only alternative. It was the only thing they were requesting, and it was the only option for the court to have. And I don't believe that the law and allowing for district courts to have the inherent powers and discretion, I don't think you can reconcile that option. And then with that, I would submit unless there are any additional questions.
No, I don't think so, Mr. Liss. Mr. Lonnie, go ahead with your rebuttal.
Thank you. And I just want to address briefly this statement by the respondent that we were granted a brief continuance. I don't believe that was ever the case. If anything, Judge Gonzalez sat up there and kind of trolled the state by saying that she was going to go in the back and grab a cup of coffee, and by the time she comes back, we better have a witness there. There was never a particular, you have 20 minutes to get a witness here, you have this amount of time to get a witness here. And even if there was, that's an unfair burden to place on the state. This was not some script that the state came up with where their lead actor did not show up. This was a case with people, with real people involved, and to say the state was completely unprepared, I think, is unfair. We had three witnesses that we were under the impression were going to testify right there. We had another witness that was 20 minutes out. I understand that jury would have been inconvenienced for 20 minutes, but the justices of the Supreme Court were trial judges before you were justices. You realize that's not outside the realm of trial. This happens all the time. Things come up like this all the time, and the fairness aspect comes into it. This isn't something that could be done to the defense. When the defense is asked to call their first witness and the judge says, well, where's your witness? The defense asks for 20 minutes. They can't say, okay, your client's guilty. Or they can't say, are you resting your case in chief? Over 20 minutes, this court would never stand for something like that. So I don't know that this... Yes?
Mr. Vellani, it's Justice Silver. I have a question.
Sure.
And it has to do with if we're making law for all of the state of Nevada, whether it's municipal court, justice court, district court, why, I mean, this is not an unfamiliar scenario in justice court. If and justice court, hundreds and thousands of cases are dismissed when the case is called and the state doesn't have their witnesses. It happens all the time. The state has to do something. They generally will still go under oath and do a Bustos motion, something to continue. Even if it's for an hour, a day, something to continue. And the only other alternative is the defense making a motion to dismiss when the state's not ready, and cases are dismissed all the time. Why is it different in district court if the state's not ready and unprepared with no witnesses?
In justice court, we're on a different footing there. If the case is dismissed, the state can do a Bustos. I've never seen a Bustos done for an hour. Usually you Bustos and they kick it out 15 days and the next preliminary hearing is held. We also have the remedy of the grand jury or the remedy of refiling down there. To do this over a 20-minute continuance after we spent 3 hours the day before impaneling members of this community as a jury. And then even when Judge Gonzalez told us about the 9:30 start, she couched it by saying, that's assuming that my calendar is going to go as planned at 9 o'clock. But now that I've said that, likely my 9 o'clock people aren't going to show up on time. So she was even taking into account. So there exists the possibility in another dimension here that we don't start till 10 o'clock and then openings don't get done till 10:30 and everything goes as planned. But that did not happen. It was a comedy of errors that kind of went against the state here. But I think to call us completely unprepared is absolutely unfair, especially given the months of trial preparation and investigation that went into this that was completely undone with one foul swoop. And I'm sorry, Justice Pickering, I did look for that. The order doesn't say specifically whether it was with or without prejudice. The only thing I think is I'd have to get deep into the transcripts about what was said, but I will submit that to whatever the record is on that issue. I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to actually go down that double jeopardy road.
Well, Mr. Vellani, this is Justice Stiglitz. In that same vein, we have an order that says a motion to dismiss was granted. What remedy could we possibly provide? Shouldn't this case go back down? If you try to refile it, you refile it, and then down below, a court will accept it, or there'll be a double jeopardy motion. I mean, it'll get litigated. I'm not quite sure what remedy you're trying to vindicate here. We can't call a jury back if we did decide that Judge Gonzalez was wrong. So what would you have us do? Why is this case ready for us to do anything, frankly?
Well, Justice, I would hope that this court is not ready to hold that as a matter of law, the state or any litigant must have a minimum of three witnesses lined up outside.
Well, Mr. Valerio, but I want to back up. I mean, that making an empty pronouncement that has no meaning is one thing, but I want to talk about the record a little bit. You decided you wanted to call your victim first. And your victim wasn't there on time. You built in a half-hour cushion on your own. These are decisions. And when Judge Gonzalez pointed out to you that you had about 28 people, names that you read to the jury and you could try to find one, and she'd give you five more minutes to do that, you declined. You said, the victim's first and our backup plan are these video witnesses. They're coming at 11 and they're coming at 1. So the record doesn't even show that there was scrambling to try to grab a detective or someone else. And I don't know if that's because perhaps there was umbrage taken. I think you've described Judge Gonzalez as trolling you here in this argument. So, it seems like maybe you were unhappy with at least what your perception of how she was approaching your situation. But nonetheless, you came in and you had a 10 o'clock, an 11 o'clock, and a 1 o'clock. And when it didn't work out, the record doesn't reflect there's any other efforts made at that time to try to get one of the other 20-some-odd witnesses in there. She offered you five more minutes, you declined, and you said, I'm sticking with the plan. We're not resting because we're calling our person and they're not here yet. So what do we do with that?
And I'm out of time. Mr. Chief Justice, may I respond briefly to that?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. The record actually does show that we took steps. And if you watch the jabs that we had submitted up there, you can see my co-counsel come and whisper in my ear. And at that point, I respond to her, she's not going to give us 20 minutes. What she whispered in my ear is there is a sergeant on the way from Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department headquarters, and he is 20 minutes away.
Hey, did you tell the judge that, though? You're saying somebody whispered in your ear. Did you tell the judge, hey, judge, I have actually witnessed, I'm making efforts to call people? Is that in the record anywhere at all?
Well, Justice, if you watch that video, she wasn't exactly giving me time to say anything. And she would scream at me when I, quote unquote, interrupted her because she, and there were things that happened, like she was berating me for not having the audiovisual witnesses prepared. And when I tried to interrupt her and say, you're making the assumption that I don't, that none of that was done, she screamed at me and told me, I'm not done yet. And it's these types of things. This is the scenario I was in. And she had told me, we're not giving you 20 minutes. So when my co-counsel came and whispered in my ear that we have a sergeant 20 minutes away, she at that point knew that we had two other witnesses 20 minutes away. And she was not willing to give us that time, so I did not assume that she was going to give me time just because we had another witness that was also going to be 20 minutes away. Thank you for the time.
All right, Mr. Valone.